Omnibus Game and Fish Bill, Senate and House Conference Committee to order. Whatever time it is, 9:15 on whatever date it is. I guess it's the second to the last day of the session. 22nd of May. Welcome, everybody. What we're going to do is we're going to go through here, Mr. Knopf go through the and do some sames and similars right away and get those out of the way. And we'll go from there. I think everybody's pretty familiar with the bill. So any questions from the committee on the process? Pretty plain, pretty simple. Without any further questions, go right ahead, Mr. Knopf.
And Mr. Chair, my understanding is we'll go through the same and similar first, and then do the different, and then do the Senate only and House only. Mr. Chair, the first ones are the VHS containment facility. The number of VHS provisions, there's one that's, there's a couple that are similar. You've got the fish health inspection and the sucker eggs, and you'll find those on R5 and 6. One of the differences is, I mean, they're very technical. Well, the first one's a very technical difference. I think the House has added some language on 5.18 to 5.19, and I think that just was missed in the Senate side. I think that makes sense there because it's fitting into all of those, either one of those documents. And then this one could be a little more substantive on 7.22 of the Senate and 6.5 of the House. The Senate says and. So the commissioner may limit, it gives conditions where they can limit, and the Senate says it takes all three with an and the House changed the and to an or on 6.5, so they could do it individually based on those things. They can limit it on any of those things. And so the question is I think the House version gives the department a little more flexibility and authority to limit the amount of sucker eggs that a person takes.
Senator Hackmark. Excuse me, Representative Hackmark.
Well, thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Well, let's go through, start at the beginning, and go adopt the same up to the point where there was differences, so we can kind of keep track of where we were.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I didn't know if you wanted to do all. Okay, so the first ones you've got section 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 7 on the Senate on both sides. It's the same. Same numbering, so it'd be those sections then, and those are the same.
And I would move those, Mr. Chairman, and move for adoption of those same.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Both same sign.
Okay, then, Mr. Chair, you have Section 8 on both sides, and R5 and 6. And again, that was it's more of a technical thing. I think the House provision is the right one to adopt.
And I would move that, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, you have on R6, you've got the sucker eggs that I was just talking about with the difference between the and the or on R6. And the question is it appears a bit more than just technical between and or.
Which side would be?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the original bill was the Senate version. And the House changed that and to an or, which I think gives the department more authority to limit.
Any thoughts on that, members?
Anybody from
the department like to comment on and or?
Senate language.
Mr. Chair, members, Ed Bogus, DNR Division of Fish and Wildlife, and I guess we hadn't noticed the difference, and no one here seems to be able to recall how this was changed, but we would prefer the or to the end.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, this was changed in the Environment Policy and Finance Committee. It was an oral amendment offered by Representative Wiginius. I believe at the time the DNR testified that they did want the or, as it
would
give more flexibility.
So or is good.
I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
That particular amendment, Senator Hackbarth moves. Any discussion? Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Both same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, you have four, starting with Section 11 on the Senate and 13 on the House. You've got the fish and wildlife planning. They're the same. VHS harvest from bait from infested waters are the same, and the sandhill crane game birds definition are the same. So you could do all four of those in one motion if you want.
Representative Hackbarth moves those four provisions. Any discussion?
Which four are they again?
It's R7, Senate 12, 13, 14.
It's
11, 12, 13, 14.
Yep.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have short recess.
Make reconsideration.
So, you want to take the Senate side?
Yes. I make a motion that we reconsider.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Having voted on the prevailing side, I move that we reconsider the provision that was just adopted, and Mr. Knopf will give the section.
On the motion to reconsider.
Yep.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay. I would need a motion for the other side.
I would make the motion that we change that from accepting the House language to accepting the Senate language. That was my original intent, and
it was so. It was mine as well. I'm sorry. Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, just which section are we on?
Mr. Chair, it's on page R6. It's section 10 on the Senate, section 9 on the House on the right side.
Any further questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, you. You can do the undressed bird definition quickly. Yeah. That's the same.
I'm old.
Okay.
It's human.
Yeah,
I would move that undressed bird section.
They're
the same.
It's the same. 16 on the Senate, 17 on the House.
That would be my motion. Any further discussion?
R9.
Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All same side. And we have to recess.
Mr. Chairman, I would move section 17 and 18, including the effective date on the Senate side.
R9. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same side.
And, Mr. Chair, on the next one, the compensation for elk damage are similar. The one difference is the department had asked us in the Senate to put in to have a little higher payment rate for silage or grain. Instead of $1,500, it's $3,000 for the emergency deterrent materials assistance. This was something that was worked out with some of the producers. And they had requested this, so the Senate made that change. If you look on page R10 and you see the on 10.18 to 10.19, you'll see the additional Senate language other than silage or grain, and then $3,000 for stored silage or grain. So it's $1,500 for storage forage crops other than silage and grain. And that was actually requested by the department because they're going to make a little higher payment, something negotiated with some of the producers.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Senate language on that. I did talk to the department, and it's all good.
Representative Hackbarth moves that portion. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
And Mr. Chair, on pages R10 through 11, there are two provisions, section 21 on both sides. 21 and 22 on VHS and refunds that are both the same. You could do a motion on that.
I'd make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Motion been made. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All same sign.
And Mr. Chairman, on page R11, you have dogs mortally wounding game. There's just a technical correction kind of on the Senate to make sure that they match up better, that if you, where it says that you pay $100 for a fine if you do not kill or mortally wound, and then $500 for killing or mortally wounding. So it just matches up the kind of parallel language on the Senate side. It was more of a fix.
I'll move the Senate language.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
Mr. Chairman, we've got a number of provisions here. I'll read through here. Section 24, 25, and 26, and 27 on both sides. You've got the big game hunting under revocation, pictorial stamp, license transfer, and taxidermist reports. Same. You just move that, I think, now that before we change pages here. Easier to deal with.
I'd make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the top of page, the second page, you've got sections 28, 29, and 30 are the same. The elk licenses, turkey license seasons, and ice fishing in state parks.
Senator Hall moves those provisions.
Yep.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, we have non-resident. We have sections 32 and then 33 on the Senate, 34 in the House, and 34, 35 on the undressed birds, section 35 and 36, no, not that one, through section 34 in the Senate are the same. Those three provisions there, dealing with non-resident fishing entering from Canada and undressed birds.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Motion's been made. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
Mr. Chair, the similar one on the parent guardian responsibility was another fix in the Senate of some technical language to make sure to be clear about the term of art that should be used there. You'll find that on page R15, and it does what it does is it clarifies. If you look on 15.25 in the Senate, legal guardian of a minor, and then we use the term minor rather than underage 18, which minor always in the statutes means under 18. And that actually, using the guardian by the original bill caused some problems because there's a definition of guardian in the game and fish laws that actually talks about a guardian of a person under 16, so it didn't quite work. And so this is actually fixes that up.
I'll move aside language, Mr. Chairman.
Motion's been made. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, members, we have the apprentice hunter validation, which is the same on both sides. That's section 36 and 37.
Senator Carlson moves the same, this provision. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, on R17, the muzzle loader handgun, this actually needs a little bit of additional work. It's the Senate actually fixed it up so it was clear to read, but the problem is it's still not quite right. It just needs a little bit more work. So if you on page R17, if you did the Senate language on 16.26 before the period, it would insert during the muzzleloader season, comma, and then on 16.27. Delete hunting during the, and then delete season on 16.27. And let me just read what it would say. And I think it'll be abundantly clear on this. Yes, on the Senate side. It'd be during the muzzleloader season, a person with a valid license to take deer by muzzleloader may not possess a firearm other than, and then you get clauses 1 and 2. And I think that would make it very clear how to do that.
Members understand that?
I'll move that.
Bill.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Colonel Smith.
Okay.
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Major Rodman Smith, DNR Enforcement Welcome. Operations Manager. I just want to make sure that clear that those changes, if I understand that correctly, if you have a muzzleloader license, you wouldn't be able to have anything other than a muzzleloader out of doors during the muzzleloader season. The department's intent was that if you're a licensed muzzleloader hunter hunting, while you're actively muzzleloader hunting, you couldn't have a firearm other than a muzzleloader. So I think the fix that's been proposed here is going to be more restrictive to people that are muzzleloader hunters. So if you're a muzzleloader licensee during the muzzleloader season under this fix, you wouldn't be able to have a firearm out of doors, even when you're not muzzleloader hunting. And I don't believe that's the intent. That wasn't the department's intent.
Representative Heck, or excuse me, McNamara.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm trying to understand this. Why are we doing this? I can just think of the last muzzleloading season where I maybe would I not be able to have both guns with me at one time. I'm just thinking I could be conceivably hunting ducks and deer out of a duck blind on property. Why are we? What's wrong with that? What do we have a problem with that for?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, the issue that we've come across are folks that are sitting in a stand with their muzzle loader, and they also have a high power rifle, and they say, well, if a coyote comes by, I'm going to whack the coyote. And we've had a number of cases where, and it's hard to, it's difficult for an enforcement officer to make that case, but we've actually had people shooting the deer with that high power rifle that's there to shoot the coyote with, and then they say, well, I shot it with my muzzle loader. So
Representative McNair, Mr. Knopf says he has a fix to that, but go ahead.
Well, let me just, Mr. Major Smith, do you have a problem with somebody having a fine shot, a shotgun, with their muzzle loader? That's what most people are going to. I don't have any problem with somebody if they got a high-powered rifle in the tree stand with them and a muzzle loader. I can figure that one out. We should get rid of that.
Yeah.
I'm with you. But this is broad, not only the fix you want to make, but I want to go one step farther. I don't want to stop somebody from being able to have a muzzle loader and a shotgun. You could be in a spot where you easily could be hunting deer and ducks at the same time, and why would we not want to allow that?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we wouldn't have a problem with that.
Just you'd have to be dressed in blaze orange. I realize that.
You are correct. But yeah, we will, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we wouldn't have a problem with that, allowing the shotgun with the fine shot. That's not a problem.
Oh, yeah, muzzle loader.
Yeah. Mr. Knopf, working his magic here.
Well, Mr. Chair, we could when the Rockford file phone goes off again, Mr. Knopf could fix it till then. We could keep moving ahead.
You got to take it. You know, it's not that I don't trust you. It's just that we would like to participate in the process.
Leave a name and number. I'll get back to you.
But Mr. Chair,
we'll have your comment on the fix here.
Mr. Chair, I think to take care of the concern, it would be, and actually Representative Hackworth recommended, so I think it's a good fix. It would be, instead of what I said during the muzzleloader season, it would just be while muzzleloader hunting, a person with a valid license to take deer by muzzleloader may not possess a firearm other than a muzzleloader that is legal for taking deer, a handgun, and I think we should add another clause that would say a shotgun. Mr. Chair, I don't know if that would take care of Representative McNamara.
Representative McNamara.
Or Mr. Chair, just delete that you can have a firearm, high-powered rifle. We have a definition, I believe, in that of how it's got to be a certain caliber that you wouldn't be able to possess that while you were muzzle load hunting. I'm not sure which way Major Smith would be better, because you can't have a 22. You can't have a 22, which conceivably I think you'd be okay with them having a 22. I mean, what if they have a 22 pistol? I mean, it's the high powered rifle I think is the issue here, and that's what I would center it around.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, you can use a 22 centerfire now.
Right.
What I'm thinking is that you would just say that they can't have one of the guns that are allowed for deer hunting, and we do have a statute that spells out what can be used for hunting deer.
That would be dope.
In the regular fire season.
Representative Dill.
Well, if you, Chairman, if you allowed shotguns, how would you deal with it? In other, like in provinces in Canada, they prescribe a maximum size of the shot.
Right.
Because, for example, obviously you could use a slug or number 4 buck or double aught buck or something like that. And, you know, you start to go down that road possibly, and that, you know, a deer could be taken with those larger shot or a slug. And, you know, you'd be back to the same problem they have already. I certainly would want someone to have a shotgun if they wanted one, but then also you wouldn't want it. I don't think the intent of the committee is to have them with slugs or double-aught buck or 4 buck or anything like that. And so then you get complicated into the shot size and what's the right shot size and all kinds of different issues. And, you know, I'm thinking that you can probably kill a deer with a load of number 6 with a number with steel BBs, for that matter, if they're reasonably close.
Representative Bill, the size of deer I shoot, I could shoot with 7.5 shot, actually. I'd like to shoot the small. I could use all the help I could get, actually.
He moved to zone 3 with Representative Drazowski. He's got all kinds of different size ones down there. What a big stick.
Yeah. How are we doing? I guess this is ready for prime time. We'll move on. Actually, we'll move on. During our next intermission, we'll have Mr. Knopf look at that. Please proceed.
And so, Mr. Chair, we'll leave that one and open. And then, Mr. Chair, we have disabled hunting from a vehicle on page R19. That's the technical, the same on both, also crossbow permits disabled.
Same.
On R19 and 20, handgun while bow hunting on R20, on deer stands on R20 are the same. So you could do those four, I think, in one motion here without getting too deep.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Motion's been made. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, let's continue on with some sames. Taking elk causing damage on page 22 is the same. And then we have duck season on R23 that's the same.
There we go.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Motion's been made. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
Yeah.
Down to Smith. Excuse me. Recess.
Short recess.
Members on the muzzle loading discussion, is that correct, Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair, yes, we have. So if you turn your page to R17, and we take the Senate side language, except before A, like we talked about earlier, it would say while muzzleloader hunting. We insert that there, and then on line 16.27, we delete hunting during the and delete season. And then on line 16.30, delete handgun and insert firearm. Delete provided and insert described. And then delete clause 4 or and insert clauses 2, 2, 5. So let me just read how it will sound when it's done.
I thought you just did. Go ahead.
While muzzleloader hunting, a person with a valid license to take deer by muzzleloader may not possess a firearm other than, and number one is a muzzleloader, and two would be a firearm as described in paragraph A clauses 2 to 5. So if you look above, you can see that you would be still be able to have an unloaded firearm in a case or closed trunk of a motor vehicle. You could have a shotgun and shells containing number 4 buckshot. That's number 3 above on 16.16. Or you could have the handgun or rifle capable of only firing rimfire cartridges or handguns possessed by a person with a concealed carry, basically. So you would be including all four of those things that they could still have while they were muzzleloader hunting.
As the
yes,
DNR is okay. Okay. You've been just consulted. Okay.
Major. Thumbs up.
Members understand the change?
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth moves. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Thank you for the work.
Yeah.
And then, Mr. Chair, on you can go to we're now on page R24, and we're talking about the 1837 ceded territory. That's the same. Northern Pike. Did you want to do, or do you want to save the Northern Pike Experimental Special Management Waters for now?
Yeah, we'll save it.
Okay, we'll leave that one open. So you're going to do the ceded territory and the fishing contests that are not the Senate only, but the on sections 48 and the Senate 49 on 48 and 49 in the Senate, 55, 56 in the House. So it'll be those three provisions that are the same. Oh, and then we also do surgeon tags on the bottom.
I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, we can go on to the third page of the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbar.
One thing, Mr. Knopf, when we just did the... section 49. Section 50. Did we adopt section 50?
No, Mr. Chair, that's a Senate only.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, we have a couple of sames on the last page. We've got the on R26, 52 on the Senate, 58 on the House, VHS transporting stock and fish. We have Bowser authorities on page R31 were the same. The immunity from the walk-in program on page R34 were the same. The game farm reporting rulemaking were the same on that. Why don't you could take those all in one motion?
Those five sections?
I'll move them.
Representative McNamara moves. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And Mr. Chair, I know you've got a couple of similar items here. Shallow Lakes Management Report is already in 1115, and I didn't know if you were going to put it in here also. It's already been passed, and it's actually it's the Senate version that's in 1115. So you probably
35.
Yeah.
And you said it's someplace else?
It's in 1115. Now, the House has not taken up 1115 yet, right?
Okay, it's in 1115 AIS bill.
Mr. Chairman?
I think it's.
Representative McNamara?
Mr. Hopper? Mr. Hopper? Mr. Knopf, you said that Section 59 on the Senate side is identical to what's in Senate file 1115. And
Mr. Chair,
I'll move that and include in this bill also, as long as it's identical language.
Representative Hackbarth moves that language in this bill. Does everybody understand that? Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And Mr. Chair, members, on R35, you have the Cass Lake Spearing. And the difference here is that the Senate is carrying it, I think, as the bill was originally introduced. The House added a sentence. If you look on 31.31 to 31.33, the House of the Commissioners shall not adopt restrictions on spearing northern pike on Cass Lake under Minnesota statute section 97C.01 to 97C.05. And what that does, it's page R35, lines 3131 to 3133. I think what the House clarifies and makes sure that they can't go back again and do it a second time. That this would, you know, both of you require repeal of the rule. But this would say that they can't do it again, just to make sure. It's kind of like a belt and suspenders.
Members, any discussion on Section 67?
Mr. Chair, I would move the House position.
Senator Carlson moves the House position on Section 67. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, at this point, I think you'll want to go back and look at some of the different ones now. You go back to the beginning compensation for elk damage. Basically, the Senate has additional language on this on page R1, yeah, R1 and R2. R1 and R2, and it's the first page of the handout. And what the Senate does is also includes additional kind of clarification technical changes to the other subdivisions. And then we also, this is more substantive, on page R2, 3.14 to 3.24 on the Senate side also clarifies their rulemaking authority and their compensation rates for fence damage or destruction. And I think the Department of Agriculture has indicated that they would prefer the Senate side because, again, we just did a little more work on it during the session. They came to us and asked for some additional language.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth moves the Senate side on R2. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And Mr. Chair, we'll continue on with the different items on the second page of the handout. Unless somebody sees one that I'm missing is going through it, please let me know. On R13 and 14, we've got the preference for service members. The difference there is the Senate says that they shall, and the House is a may.
I move the House position, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gazelka's bill. Representative Hackbarth moves the House position to that. Senator Gazelka.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. In committee, I do not think the DNR had a problem with our language, but we can get their perspective.
DNR, come forward, please.
Thank you.
Mike Don Carlos, DNR, Mr. Chairman, members. We prefer the permissive language.
That would be the House position?
Yep.
Senator Gazelka?
Mr. Chair, I prefer the Senate language.
Okay, the motion is the motion is Representative Hackbart moves the House position. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Senate language.
Does not prevail, I'm sorry. Senator Gazelka moves the Senate language. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
They both fail.
Shell slash me.
Well, Mr. Chair, so we don't have that in the bill then right now. If we want to move on to another different one, well, we do have scopes on muzzleloaders. The Senate allows scopes for anyone.
Which
the House,
page is where are we at?
Page R16. It's 33 on the Senate, 39 on the Senate. On the
this
House.
Is the this is the full blown muzzleloader. Is that correct language? I know we have a couple of them in here. Oh, this is the modify.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the Senate is carrying the full-blown. A person may use a scope with or may use a muzzleloader with a scope to take deer during muzzleloader season. The House has more technical change to for who can certify for those with visual impairments.
I would move the House language, members. Any further discussion? That's for the impaired. Is that I understand that correctly?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's for impaired, and you will note, though, on 15.5 to 15.6, the scope may not have magnification capabilities, even for those with that are sight impaired.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. There's not a provision in here for 4 power?
There's not, Mr. Chair.
Members, I had talked to this. I think it was a Senator Roebling, wasn't
Roebling.
It? Senator Roebling bill that asked for a 4 power. I'm surprised that's not in here. Is that the House language? I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is language that was brought to me in the original Game and Fish bill by the DNR. It's a department position. And the original language was only to help folks that were disabled to be able to get a permit and get a rather than having to go to a doctor, now they would be allowed to have a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant to get these permits in order to get a permit from the DNR to get them to sign off. And the DNR can speak to that. The modified language that you have on the Senate side, you just used this language in order to make scopes on muzzleloaders legal, and that's what happened there. I didn't see any language in the House from a Roebling bill or a companion to it in the House that offered anything for a 4-powered scope.
Okay. If I could ask the department, I know that there was one. I'm not sure. I don't know if the committee's open to that or not, but could the department comment one way or the other on the not to exceed four power magnification?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The House side is a DNR's preferred language, but that maintains the prohibition on scopes on muzzleloaders. The Senate side allows or authorizes the use of scopes with no power restriction. We're basically neutral on the subject, but we have said that we don't see a need to have a power restriction. The issue is whether scopes are going to be allowed on muzzleloaders or not, and whether it's 4 power or 2 power or 6 power is not significant to us.
So, Mr. Chair, would you want
Mr. Kanawha?
Well, Mr. Chair, then what the department is saying is they would be okay on the House side with eliminating the sentence on 15 point after the period on 15.5 and 15.6.
That would
Mr. Don Carlos, that would eliminate the magnification capabilities of that?
The restriction of magnification.
The restriction of that?
And Mr. Chairman and members, if you're going to go that direction, I wouldn't think you would do it that way. The House side allows for permits for some, or for scopes which are prohibited by law. If you're going to remove that prohibition, it would seem to me you'd go to the Senate side.
Well, Mr. Kanaan.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we're not talking about allowing everybody to use them. This would still be only the people who are certified.
Visually impaired.
That's right. Visually impaired, yes.
Senator Scroy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is a controversial provision. I wonder if we shouldn't make smaller steps at this. And I know from my hunting experience that just getting the optics and the tube and the crosshairs is a significant benefit for people who are using glasses. So, maybe we ought to just give them the tube and the lens and the crosshair and not have any magnification this round.
Senator Scoy, I believe that's exactly what's going on now. If you're referring to the scope or the red dot, I believe. Is that correct? So that's current law.
Is that current law?
Yes.
And so what
this would be, I understand this would be magnification just for those that have a permit, just for those that are visually impaired.
And, Mr. Chair, did I understand the House to say that they were okay with that with no magnification? I wasn't hearing that correctly.
No, you heard it right.
That's what the bill has. Mm-hmm.
That's what the House bill does.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, what the House language is doing is allowing it a little easier for folks with visual impairments to not have to necessarily see a licensed physician. They would be able to see the nurse practitioner or an optometrist. But it does not change the no magnification allowance. If we go down the road of magnification, we need to realize this is a wide group of people that all of a sudden a licensed optometrist, most of us at the table are taking glasses on and off right now, so I wouldn't imagine some of us may want to go visit a friendly optometrist in a hurry, and I don't know that we want to go there. So I think, Senator Scoy, you're right that the House language is what we maybe should be doing.
Representative McNamara, are you saying you're visually impaired now?
Mr. Chair, I've got more impairments than just vision.
Yeah. I was going to go there, but being you already brought me there, I certainly understand. I would renew my motion just to go with the House language. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign.
And then, Mr. Chairman, looking for other different hunting hour restrictions on page R19. Well, we didn't do it. So I went to page R19.
Okay.
It's hunting hour restrictions. The Senate eliminates all statutory provisions on hunting hours. The House retains the waterfowl season one, the early part of the season, so allowing DNR to keep the 4 o'clock closing during the day, and also the big game seasons, whereas the Senate eliminates all statutory restrictions on hunting hours and would allow the commissioner to do it as the commissioner sees fit.
I would move the Senate position on that. The House position.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 And then, Mr. Chair, we have bear permits, bear permits. Different. Bear permits on R20 to 21, sections 36 and 46. And, Mr. Chair, the difference here between section 36 and the Senate and 46 on the House is the House basically says that if you don't purchase it by August 1,
right,
then they become counter. They can sell them at counter sales, whereas the Senate says that if you don't purchase it by the Friday closest to it, these are people who have gotten bear permits or won them in the lottery or drawing, and they have to purchase them by the Friday closest to July 31st, and then any available ones that are on the following Wednesday, anything available would be first made available to those people who were unsuccessful in the lottery. And then they basically would give them about a week to do that, and then they would be open up for counter sales after that. So you've got in the Senate side, you've got that window where you're allowing people who are unsuccessful to apply for the ones that have not been purchased. Whereas, and on the House side, they just become counter sales right after, if they're not purchased by August 1.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the House language, please, and that's the preferred language by the department. It also fixes the problem that in my district and others who have bear hunting, where the second choice was a problem and the tags were getting allocated but not used. So it put outfitters out of business.
Representative Dill, that is the issue, isn't it? They're not getting used. So this does address that.
Mr. Chairman. What happens is the people take the second choice, and it happens to be in the boundary waters. When they take the second choice, they don't realize they have to go in a canoe and paddle and sleep in a tent. And the outfitters in Ely sell hunts specifically for that. But when the tags got used up under the former system, they were unable to sell their hunts, and it meant hundreds of thousands of dollars to those outfitters up in Ely that always never had any real competition for those permits over the years.
Okay. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, I'm a little confused between the House and the Senate language. It appears that, at least in the Senate language, I thought it did the same thing that you were referring to, only except that it would give an unsuccessful lottery entrant a shot first instead of just an over-the-counter. Is that the only difference, really, or am I not reading that right?
Representative Dill.
No, to me, under my understanding, it's the only difference. And what they're going to have to be is they're going to have to be there 3 days after, August 1st? 3 business days after August 1st there and get a license.
Senator Carlson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Wouldn't we want to give an unsuccessful applicant that first shot before just going over the counter, no?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
No.
Mr. Don Carlos, could you weigh in, please?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try. The House version eliminates the second choice application and drawing, and the Senate version does not. And I believe that is part of the issue with that Representative Dill is talking about. So the second part of it, the difference is the Senate would allow applicants who apply for just who apply to get first and get refused to get first crack. The House would not allow that. Perhaps the bigger key is the House eliminates the second choice drawing, which I believe has been a problem for the guides and their management. Mm-hmm.
Representative Dill. Renews his motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Thank you.
Last page.
R21, beer permits different. And then, Mr. Chair, we have... looking for different here. Removal of beavers by local road authorities. On page R23, 37 on the section 37 in the House, 50 on the 37 in the Senate, 50 in the House. And the difference here, I'm getting the page, is that the Senate requires you to contact the conservation officer if you're going to be doing this in advance. And to get a permit, and it must be issued by the conservation officer. I think there was some additional work on the Senate side on this between the conservation officers and the township association, if I remember right.
I would move the Senate side members. I did a fair amount of work on this with the townships as well, and they're certainly good with this. So I would move that. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Then, Mr. Chair, we have. On the third page, we have the BHS for bait. It's page R28, Senate Section 54, and House Section 60.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
I can move the House language, please.
Representative Dill moves the House language on R...
Excuse me, 28.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, and just in the event that the House language does prevail, there's a few just little technical things that would need to be changed. There's some inconsistencies between it applying to both frozen and dead, and if we could just be instructed to fix those, if the House language...
Any further discussion on the
Mr. Chair,
deal motion? Motion?
The only thing you made, is Section 61 related to Section 60?
Yes.
I was wondering if you wouldn't want to move those two together and just get it done.
Through, Mr. Chairman, I believe it goes all the way, Mr. Chairman, through the end of R30.
What?
Would be Section 61, Section 60 on page R28, and Section 61 on 29, and the balance of that is runs down to the end of R30. And that's all has to do, Mr. Chairman, about bait and how they're used, how they're packaged, how they're certified from water. And this is another problem that happened up in the Northeast when we started doing VHS-type things, which we need to do. We basically eliminated the catching of Ciscos from uninfested water, uninfected waters, I should say, uninfected waters, and put the trout industry out of business, trout fishing in the Northeast along the Canadian border, because they couldn't go to Basswood Lake, to Basswood Falls, catch all the Ciscos that are essentially caught for inland fishing in Minnesota are caught at Basswood Falls on Basswood Lake in the boundary waters with a canoe. And then they're brought out and they're sold at bait shops all over the North. Well, the last language we passed prohibited that. So this language clarifies some things that you can ask the DNR what it clarifies, complicated technical issues, and sets up a system so that they can go ahead, get the water certified at their cost. They reimburse the department for that. Get a certification, catch the fish, label the fish, package the fish. I know it's boring, but it needs to be done. House language.
So Representative Dill moves the, are we clear on the language here? And would the DNR come up and weigh in on this too, please?
Chair,
if there's any questions.
Very quickly, Bob Murray, Department of Natural Resources. We do support the House language, and I apologize. We didn't have the language identical moving in the Senate. Sometimes we have issues. We work in one body or the other. Try to keep track of them is often difficult in the game of fish bill. But if you do accept the House language, which we would support, we need to take the couple technical changes that Ms. Taylor has dealing with the frozen or dead bait stuff.
We should incorporate them in the same motion then, Ms. Taylor? Do you want to explain those? Or
no.
Okay. Mr. Meyer, you do know where the Senate is. You can come over and confer with us on some of these things.
Mr. Chair, I do, and we do, and oftentimes it's just a matter of timing and having language available. And I think this issue
we
actually
would appreciate the consideration.
Divide. Mr. Chair, point well taken. Thank you.
I would rarely, Mr. Chairman, defend the DNR on anything, but this issue kind of got started up in my district.
Representative Hackbarth.
I accuse him of the same thing in the House.
Representative Bill renews his motion. Does everybody understand the motion?
Sure, both sections.
Both sections?
60 and 61.
As 60 and 61.
With the technical modifications.
With the technical modifications. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, I think the next one where we're different but have a position is the coyote bounties on page R32. And I think the only difference is the House lists the towns as being able to have a bounty. If you look on 25.18, it says a county or town board may by resolution. And if you look on 28.29 on the House side, it says a county board may. I think that's the only difference that I'm...
You know what I think?
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, we've got examples. I mean, some even this morning of coyotes chasing geese right in the metropolitan area. Why would we not want to just allow any government body by resolution offer to do?
Mr. Knopf, I think it covers both, is that correct?
Yep.
The Senate language.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, you got to understand, this gets a little complicated with what county governments can do and town governments can do and what municipalities have very broad authority to do, basically take care of the common good. Counties can do only what the legislature tells them they can do, basically in law. They don't have the broad powers that a municipality. I think a municipality could do this under their general authority, but and I think even towns. I mean, we have a representative from the township association here, but I think even towns have some of that broad authority now. They didn't used to. That's actually during my career here. Towns were actually given broader authority. So I'm not even sure that you need to have town in here, but we can hear from
Mr. Sewell. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sulem, General Counsel at the Township Association. For clarity's sake, if towns are to have this authority, we would prefer the Senate language. With regards to the city issue, that did come up during committee hearing, and the primary issue was that most cities have no discharge ordinances, which is why they were not added at that time. I do not have a preference whether they're included or not. But if you were going to include the municipalities, you'd actually want to spell it out as home rule or charter, home rule charter or statutory city or town.
Yeah.
But that was I was involved with those discussions at the request of Representative Peterson earlier in session. It was the no discharge provisions that led to those being not included.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I'm going to move the Senate language. Then.
Representative Dill moves the Senate language. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, we got a couple of, we have the Lutzen water use permit on page R36. That's different.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
And the House.
Excuse me. Let's just go ahead and get the discussion here. Description. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the House is carrying. I think the language that's in Senate File 1115, whereas what shows up on the Senate side is our original position going in on 1115. So, if you did take something, you'd want to take the House version here. But,
I mean, Mr. Chairman, that's what I plan to move Section 70 on the House side. That's the agreed upon by for all extents and purposes, all the parties except possibly. Trout Unlimited and some of those
correct.
Organizations.
Representative Dillon, I believe that takes in the five-year.
Yes, correct.
Or thing. I'm sorry, Representative Hackworth.
Well, just for clarity's sake here, now if we move the House language and the Senate language is in Senate File 1115, what's
not?
It's
the House language.
Oh, the House language. Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Thank you.
Representative Dill moves the House language. Is that correct?
Yes.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, the repealers show up as different, but I think we should deal with that later. Really, the only big difference on the House side is tied to a House-only provision, and we should probably wait to see how that's resolved.
Sure. Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, then we can go back again to page one. And then the first thing you'll see is on R6 and 7, you got three ATV definitions on the House side, sections 10, 11, and 12.
These are R6 and 7.
Yes. R6 and R7.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbar.
I've got an amendment here that's going to help us solve some of this situation.
This is the... Representative Hackbarth offers the A10 amendment. Members will pass it out. To your amendment, Representative Hackbarth.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the language that's in the Game and Fish Bill is the language that we talked about and was deleted from Senate File 1115, and it shows up here now. And the amendment didn't cover everything I really wanted it to cover, so I'm going to have to make a couple of motions here. I'd make a motion to accept the A10 amendment, and what that would do would... adopt the language that begins on page R6, section 10.
No, this just clarifies. If you're going to take it here, you should do this.
And it would adopt that language that's there. It also deletes... Ms. Taylor, could you explain it? Maybe you do a better job of explaining the amendment.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, what the amendment, the A10 amendment does is replace section 10 in the bill, and it just, the real significant difference is it just says that if Senate file 1115 does pass, which has a different version of this provision, that this would supersede it. So this would go into effect. And then if, you know, the committee chose, they could then move the sections 10, 11, and 12 as amended.
So it would be two motions. It would be a motion to do the amendment, mm-hmm. pass that, and then my next motion would be to adopt sections 10, 11, and 12 as amended.
Are we clear on the motions? Any further discussion on the Hackbarth amendment? The A-10 amendment, as described by Ms. Taylor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Amendment carries.
Then I would make a motion to adopt section 10, 11, and 12 as amended.
Everybody understand that motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gesalt. Excuse me, Senator Gesalt.
Close enough.
It's a long day.
I would like to see or hear from Mr. Georgicus, if I could, on this.
Mr. Georgicus.
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the conference committee, my name is Chris Georgicus, representing Polaris Industries. I just want, owing to the hour, I'll be very brief. Several members of this conference committee served on the conference committee on Senate File 1115. I just want to make the point that the language in the House version, sections 10, 11, and 12, originated from stakeholders' discussions convened by the DNR over a period of many months involving user groups, DNR's trail and enforcement divisions, and manufacturers. We came up with consensus language that was language represented in Senator Gazelka's motorized recreation bill earlier this session. The significant difference, and it is significant for the manufacturers, is that in line 6.19 and 6.20, the language relating to straddle seats. All the manufacturers who have representation before the legislature, Polaris Industries, my client, Arctocat, and Bombardier, are opposed to this particular provision. It is significant in particular for Polaris Industries, which is the largest manufacturer of side-by-side vehicles. They think this sets a very bad precedent in showing a retreat on the ability for side-by-side vehicles to ride on trails with the smallest side-by-side vehicles on Class 1 trails, and I wanted to just register the manufacturer's concerns on this provision. Thank you.
Excuse me, Senator Gazelka.
I want to give you another opportunity, Mr. Chair. I'd like Mr. Bone to come up. I want to get your perspective.
Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone. I'm here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, and as Mr. Georgica said, we did participate in those stakeholder groups, and we did agree to those provisions, but it's our conclusion that this issue doesn't warrant all the work that's being done on it. We think we can actually live with either provision, and if we need to do more in the future with the manufacturers, if there are changes, we will keep working with them and see what we can do to make sure that they are taken care of in the future.
Thank you.
Members, Representative Hackbarth renews his motion to accept the House language on sections, help me here now, 10, 11, and 12.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth.
I'm sorry, but I've just got to say something, and this really bugs me on the floor, and I know Representative Biskins knows this when people get up, and maybe things are going their way, but and then they have to get up and talk. and I'm not one of those persons that do that, but I've just got to make some clarifications here. There's only 10% of the ATV trails that are Class 1 trails. 10% is practically nothing. And they're more difficult, more challenging trails. I said this in the conference committee and on Senate File 1115. People go out, volunteers build those trails. They make those trails through the woods. The people that are out there building these trails, riding these trails, don't want the Class 1 more difficult, more challenging trails turned into the superhighways that Class 2 trails will become. And that's why I'm drawing such a firm line in the sand on this Class 1, Class 2 issue. You put side-by-side machines on Class 1 trails, they're going to widen those trails. They get out there, and they're not going to be able to make it through some of the spots where there's trees in the way and rocks in the way. They purposely make those trails more difficult for those reasons. And these Class 2 machines, the side-by-side, do not belong on Class 1 trails. You might as well not have a Class 1 and a Class 2 trail or a Class 1 or a Class 2 machine and just allow all ATVs on all ATV trails. And maybe that's what the manufacturers want. But I'm telling you, that's not what the riders want. And that's why I'm probably the only person that's standing up for the people that want to keep those Class 1 trails, Class 1 trails. So that's why this language is here, and that's why I'm fighting for it.
Members, I know Representative Hackbarth is very passionate about this. In fact, I know he's been the person that's been working with the groups. In fact, he and I met with him over in Arrowwood. He was kind enough to invite me over there with Mr. Bone and talk about the trail. So I know he's very passionate about this and has done a lot of work. So, members, I'm going to support the Hackbarth motion here. So any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the Hackbarth motion to accept 10, 11, and 12? Say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you. To now the amended, the way the ATV, I just have one question. I believe there's a small number of these ATVs have been licensed. And I'm wondering, does the DNR, do they just need on the tape that those ones, until they're up for renewal, would have that correct license? I'm wondering if there's some way. Representative Hackbarth, isn't there a possibility? I think I heard testimony there's 100 or 200 of these licensed that way until they're up for renewal. I'm assuming they would just let them be Class 1s, but just so we wouldn't have somebody caught in. I don't know, Representative Hackbarth, if you have an idea on what we could do there, but maybe the DNR has an idea.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara. I would be curious to know what the DNR is going to do about this. This is an inadvertent mistake that was made by the legislature to put these on Class 1 trails in the first place. And I'm curious to find out what the DNR plans to do about enforcing what we do now. I would be open to allowing what has been registered as a Class 1 side-by-side continue until their registration is renewed. I don't have any language for that, but I would be open to it. But I'd be curious to know what their suggestion is and how they're going to enforce it, or would they just allow it to happen, and when their registration is renewed, they have to renew as a Class 2.
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Major Rodman Smith, DNR. We've gone down this road before. We changed the definition of Class 1 and Class 2s and raised the weight requirements. We had some Class 2s that became Class 1s not too long ago. So we've been down this road before. And I can't tell you with 100% certainty, but I could get back to you, Representative McNamara, but I believe we were just going to allow those registrations to go through, and then when their three-year cycle was up, then they'd have to be registered as a Class 1 or a Class 2, whatever it was. But I can't say 100%, but this isn't new ground. We've dealt with this in the past.
Mr. Chair, if they've already dealt with it before, it sounds like they can deal with it again. I'm satisfied.
Any further questions? Okay, let's continue down.
Mr. Chair, the next one, it's a Senate only. It's on page R8 and R9, and it's the gray wolf small game definition. This is actually matched with another provision you'll see later on. I don't know if you wanted to still want to take that separately, but if you look on the Senate side, 9.7, we add the gray wolf to the small game list.
Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Kanoff, could you tell us where the other gray wolf issue is, too? And I think we should adopt it all at one time. And, Mr. Chairman, I would move the Senate position.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am getting to that.
Give me a second to look at it here.
Mr. Chair, it's on page R23, 22 and 23, and it's section 44. And what the Senate did was we had this back in 2000 when this was adopted. It said that they couldn't be an open season for 5 years after delisting. Well, it's been 11 years now since that. And what this does, it just says that once they're delisted, the DNR could go ahead and start to set seasons for gray wolf.
Members understand that? This is fairly significant news just recently because of the I believe it was the delisting. Representative Dill.
It's about time. Let's vote.
Representative Dill, is there a problem with wolves up in your neck of the woods?
There'll be less now.
They run over to the Canadian side and there's no more problem.
Can we do that here?
Have a small. Would
DNR like to discuss that at all?
Mr. Chairman, Mike Don Carlos again. There is a federal delisting proposal that's in the works, but wolves are not delisted. They're still under federal regulation, and will likely be so for at least the next year or longer. But it is true, and I testified earlier, that provision, I was a big fan of that provision in a previous life. And at the time that that statute was enacted, there was no expectation that 11 years later we would still not be delisted in Minnesota. So it's less important than it was when it was adopted.
I move that.
Representative Hackbarth's motion to met. Representative Hackbarth's motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, on page R10, we have another Senate-only provision dealing with the walleye stamp, where it's what the Senate did was say that all of the money would be going to purchase walleyes for stocking from the private sector.
I would move that provision. Any discussion, members? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chair, we have to back up. I missed one on R2 and R3. This deals with contract restrictions, exemptions for aquaculture. This is another provision related to aquaculture, and it deals with the state bartering law. And what this would do would be allow them an exemption from the restrictions on the amount of money, especially when they're trading fry for walleye fingerlings to stock. And what this would do is to allow them to be exempt from that restriction. You can see it on page R3, 3.26 to 3.31, where it's allowing them to bypass the $100,000 annual exchange for a barter.
Could the DNR come forward on this one? Welcome back. Where have you been?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. DNR is okay with that provision.
I would move that provision. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, I think we've got everything from page one of the table, I think, is done. I might have seen something here.
Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe we skipped over Senate Section 9 on R6.
Sale of fish eggs.
Oh, yes, you're right. In the sheet, which shows an option on it.
to Section 9R6, member.
Mr. Chair, that just removes some of the restrictions on how much that they can offer, and it adds the word barter also, so it does include the barter, and then it also removes the 2% restrictions on what can be sold or bartered with the private sector. Again, it's an aquaculture-related provision.
Would the DNR like to weigh in on that at all?
I think they're good.
I think they're good.
They're fine with it. They said they were okay with it.
Mr. Chair, I'll give Mr. Don Carlos a break here. We do support this language. There's also another section that's similar to this in the bill.
Well, I'll move this section, members. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Okay, which one are
you? It's R27, but maybe if you want to wait till we get there, but... I have been working with aquaculturalist representatives and the industry folks. It's actually at Section 53 on R27, and it goes to the top of R28. And actually what we would prefer doing is taking the Senate language but striking the word not at the end of 23.22. And this is what would read, the commissioner may sell or barter game fish, fry, or eggs for less than the cost associated with productions of the eggs or fry. And then on page 28, we would strike the remainder of that Senate language, 23.26 to 23.28. For not less than the cost.
Deputy Commissioner Meyer, this is something you worked out with the growers, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And it was satisfactory with them?
Yes. The intention is that we need to work more cooperatively together, kind of work as we take our eggs and work with them in producing and things like that, and this language will help us do that, Mr. Chair. So maybe Mr. Knopf can help me make sure that's the right way.
Mr. Knopf.
Chair, Mr. Meyer, you want to be able to sell for less than your cost?
Sell or barter for, yes.
Less than your cost of production?
Or not less than Meyer. The cost associated. I'm sorry, yes.
So, Mr. Chair, you want to,
Mr. Cano,
you want to delete the not on 23.22 and insert it after 4 on line 23.23. Is that the idea? You're just changing the location of the not,
Mr. Meyer.
Yes, and then after sell on 23.23, insert or
right,
barter.
Right.
Yes. That would be my motion.
And then, Mr. Chair, you're not doing paragraph B.
Yeah.
You're only doing paragraph A.
And then delete that B on 23.26.
We'll include that in my motion. Members, you understand it? Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All the same sign? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, getting back to the list.
I can handle it once they turn that down.
Then on page 1.
Sure, we did them as well.
On page 1, you know?
And uncased guns, and I think, is the next one.
What did we add on that one? Which page are we?
Both.
R17, members. I believe talks about uncased gun. Is that correct?
Do you want me to bring it up? You
Representative Dill.
I'm looking on R17 where we're at here. Oh, yep. Okay, that's actually the language is on R18, isn't that
well,
correct?
R17 and 18.
Starts on 17.
So what our intention was, what has happened, Mr. Chairman, is that this has worked well across the state with the exception, one exception, and that is that when someone goes into a town under 2,500, particularly, they do not know, they can read the sign on the, when they go into the town that it says, you know, 3,000 or 3,500 or whatever the number is, but they don't know unless they talk to City Hall or look on some internet site where it may or may not be listed that they're going into a town that has a shooting ordinance, a no shooting ordinance. And so so let's just set up a hypothetical. I was going from Senator Scoy's house over to my house, and I'm thinking about the towns that I go through, and I mean, Bemidji, I'd obviously have to have my gun cased. And then I could drive to
to down to Orr. If I went on Highway 71, I'd have out through the rural part of International Falls, I'd have to have it cased. But when I went through Little Fork, it had an uncased a no shooting ordinance in Little Fork. I'd have to case it, but I would have no way to know, even though the population of Little Fork's like 600 people. I'd have no way to know that. Now, I know the cities now here are got something in a bunch over this provision, so I'd like to hear from them. But it sets the hunter up for a failure. It sets the person that intends to hunt lawfully up for a failure here. And the department said they were fine with it. And in fact, Representative Hillstrom had no objection to it and said she wouldn't testify against it. And she was the one that helped us craft this language in the first place when we were in the majority.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson, here with the League of Minnesota Cities, and was also asked to make comments on behalf of the police chiefs who agree with the league's position on this. In 2009, this was first brought up. Representative Dill carried legislation, and we agreed that in cities under 2,500 that have chosen not to enact a no-discharge permit, in other words, they're not feeling that there's a need to regulate that for public safety in their community, that it is appropriate for people to be able to make these sort of short trips through the community without needing to case their gun to do that. What this change does, and the reason we have concerns with it, is it says for all cities under 2,500, even if they have decided that they need certain firearm regulations in their community, that they a person would be able to travel through their town, claim that they were going between hunting sites, and be able to have their gun uncased in their vehicles. It's definitely true that you can't know driving into a town whether or not they have a no-discharge ordinance. You don't actually know any of the ordinances in a community when you drive into the community. It's the responsibility of a person to learn the ordinances in a community before they do anything, so I'd recommend if you haven't checked the community, you put the gun in the case when you're driving through a city. Would be the easiest way to avoid getting a problem with it. But if you're regularly hunting in an area, you can certainly ask the city. They'll tell you whether they have a no-discharge ordinance, and you'll know. But cities up to 2,500 get to some fairly large cities that do have public safety concerns about this. And if they have a lot of hunters in their area, this can be a very busy issue with a lot of people driving around, a lot of guns, especially during hunting seasons, and a lot of people able to say that they're just driving between hunting sites. And so it is a concern, both for the police chiefs and the League of Cities. We would appreciate that it be left that if a city does have a no-discharge permit, that guns need to be cased when transported.
Mr. Johnson, you do understand, though, that what Representative Bill is talking about, I mean, we are kind of setting them up for failure. I mean, they're... It's just going to be hard, and I don't think the cities are going to want to put that ordinance on their signs. I certainly understand the concern. Members, any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Miskowski.
I just want to add in support Representative Dill and his position. I live in a town of about 800 people. I live right next to the mayor, and I'm not certain yet whether there is a discharge ordinance in town or not. And so I think the points are very well taken. It's a good provision.
Representative Dill.
And one last thing, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And this doesn't mean that you can discharge the firearm. This doesn't mean that it can be loaded in the car or on the vehicle or around the vehicle. It just takes out, to me, it's a common sense thing. And I can understand that maybe some communities have some sensitivity to this, but I didn't realize, or I wouldn't have agreed to this originally, that this was going to set somebody up for a serious failure. And so I'd ask you to support the language, and I respect the position that the cities have, but I also know that we don't want to, as you said, set people up for failure, and it's just a common sense thing, in my opinion.
And members, just to be clear, in the statute, it still does not include the counties of Anoka, Hennepin, and Ramsey. They have to be cased, correct?
Right.
And bigger, larger cities than 2,500, just so everybody's clear on that. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I guess you didn't make a motion, I don't believe.
I'll move the language.
Representative Dill moves that language. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign?
No. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbarth.
I would like to move on R13 or R14, Section 31, the House language. This is the... preference for service members that we voted on earlier. I would like to make a motion that we adopt the House language.
Representative Hackbarth moves that language on R 13 and 14. Is that correct? To that, Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, what do we have in the budget bill? What language do we have? The one that passed earlier, or that's before the governor, the one earlier.
Mr. Chair, if I remember right, that was the Senate provision.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that in the House we changed that to May, and when it left the House, Representative McNamara, and I know that the House bill also says May and not shall.
Oh, here it is. I got it. Senator Gazelka. Mr. Chair, in the conference committee, though, the bill that passed both bodies, is that May or Senate language?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, not 100%, but since it was the Senate provision that was adopted in conference, it's my understanding that it's shall.
So I would still be opposed to this then.
We understand the Hackbarth amendment to, R 13 and 14. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To the amendment.
Obviously, it looks like the difference is we're allowing the commissioner to use their discretion whether they do this, as opposed to telling our service people that I guess I'd like to hear the DNR's. If the DNR could speak to this, please.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could explain
Representative Hackbarth.
My position on this. I believe the DNR does this anyway, and the issue becomes how many permits are going to be. And if there's so many preferred preference members out there that the regular people can't apply and get the permits, I think that becomes a problem for the DNR. And that's why we'd like to keep it open and discretionary. I believe the DNR does this anyway, and there's never going to be a problem, and there's not going to be that many people that are going to do this anyhow. But I would like to hear from the DNR and hear what they have to say. But if they have the option to keep it open, then you can maybe give some to the to the Purple Heart owners and to some of the service members, and you can give some to the general public, et cetera. I just feel that, if we have all these exemptions and preferences in law already for a lot of different military folks in different manners, and I think that's a good thing. But we keep it shall in other areas as well. And I would like to hear what the DNR has to say.
First, Representative McNamara to the amendment.
Well, I just wanted, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the flexibility here, because I'd like to say this before the DNR. We have a really special area, the Vermilion Highlands in Dakota County, that has a very limited number of deer permits, extremely high-quality hunt, and we've really regulated them, and they're very, very valuable. I think we could run the risk where if the word got out with a certain community, they could potentially apply for these permits, and because it's a real small, limited hunt, and that's a special WMA that's, I would be concerned right there that could happen. And I think that serves as an example of why we would want to give the DNR the flexibility here.
Mr. Chair, before we go any further, I'll withdraw my opposition. I'll support the House language.
Okay. Any further discussion, members? To the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have some pasture provisions in here dealing with this walk-in program and liability. I think there's an A-12 amendment.
Excuse me, Senator. Sorry. We're gonna finish the sheet here first before we do that.
Sorry. We were winding
down.
And Mr. Chair, with the after uncased guns, we have a Senate-only provision on baiting bears on page R-21, section 42. And, Mr. Chair, that would give more flexibility for identifying the site. Under current law, I think the person has to either use the licensee's name and address or the licensee's driver's license number. This would allow
the MDNR number, their license identification number, to be used to mark the site. And this was Senator Carlson's.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was brought to me by one of my constituents whose wife is a bear hunter. And his concern is he just doesn't want his wife's name and address plastered all over the woods. And I thought it was a reasonable request. We do this for ice fishing houses and all other sorts of means. There's no reason not to just use an MD. And I don't believe that the DNR had any opposition to this either.
Senator Carlson moves this provision.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, you have a house only on baiting bears with a drum, which is on R22.
Oh, not a base drum. Representative Dill.
I'll move the language. This was in the last game of fish bill that was vetoed. It's common practice. It's cleans things up, makes it better for the landowners, makes it better anywhere a drum is used. You don't have the bait spread all over the countryside. You don't have 10,000 ravens sitting over the top of a bait. It's in a drum. It's contained. By and large, a little bit of the bait gets out. It has to be chained to a tree. The station has to be identified. It'll be identified now, Senator Carlson, assuming the bill passes. All those things would apply to it. This is in Canada, where we outfit in Canada at my resort. It's the only way it's done.
Representative, you move this section to that, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, would it be possible we could amend this just to make sure that it doesn't say name, that we could say name, address, or MNDNR number, just to make sure that we have that clarification that it doesn't have to be name and address?
Representative Dill.
Well, certainly, and as I said in my testimony a minute ago, subject to his now change in the law, I'd leave Knopf must have to figure that out for us.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what might be better would be to say, instead of the name and address of the person who registered the bait site, we could just say must be identified as provided in the previous section that we were talking about, so that you would have the same
criteria
and the same options for license, because it also includes you could have your license, your driver's license number or whatever. So I'm thinking that what you'd want to do is just cross-reference that. It must be marked as provided in...
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you already have to identify a bait site and register a bait site and put the information that Senator Carlson is now going to put up there, we wouldn't need it on the barrel at all, because that site's already going to be identified as a bait site where a hunter is legally hunting and registered. So, really, it just would fall under the bait. This is just a provision now. As I'm now talking with Representative McNamara, that allows a drone. And the licensing requirement that Senator Carlson has just put in would apply to the entire site. Mm-hmm. That'd be correct. So we wouldn't need any language in there to address how it was licensed or tagged or however.
But,
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, the question is whether you want them to identify the site and to identify the barrel, or would just the site identification be enough?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to
Representative
think about,
Dill.
Trying to think about the testimony now. And one of the things the department said, and I see Mr. Meyer raced right up here.
It wasn't quite a race.
Mr. Meyer, I've never known you to race anywhere, but.
That wasn't a race.
One of the things that they wanted to, Mr. Chairman, that they wanted to be able to do is to track back if the barrel's laying in the middle of the woods somewhere. That they could figure out who had it. So maybe we do need the licensing in there. I was thinking, it's a site, it's all registered.
I don't want that, yeah.
We don't do it in Canada, but I can understand how we want to do it here.
Mr. Meyer. We aren't doing Canadian law tonight.
But
Mr. Meyer, your comments.
Mr. Chair, our concern is exactly what Representative Dill said. If that barrel does move off of that property so we could identify the rightful owner and make sure that they get their barrel back to them or they come and get their barrel. So,
along with the
letter. Do you have that clear, Mr. Knopf?
Exactly. Mr. Chair,
will you repeat the...
It basically would be on line 19.31. You delete everything in that sentence after marked, and then you would insert as provided in 97B.425.
That would be the Dill motion. Everybody understand? Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, we have a research bear provision on the House side, R22. And that's section 48.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that section. House position.
House position. We need to get rid of D of paragraph C. I'm sorry. Senator, excuse me, your motion was to
adopt
section which?
48.
Section 48. 30. To that amendment,
subsection
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Representative Hackbarth would be agreeable to eliminating section B.
C.
I understand wanting to be respectful of the research bears, and I think that we need to do that, but I think we get to a point where it gets to be a little onerous, and I would like to amend the motion, I guess, if that's what it would take to strike section B.
Representative Hackbarth.
And section C. I'm sorry. Section B and C.
Representative Hackbarth to the senator's motion.
I would oppose the motion to.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
To adopt the amendment.
To the amendment. That would be B and C, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Dill.
Well.
To that motion.
I'm going to oppose that as well. It's totally permissive on line 20.10. It says may request. That's totally permissive. It doesn't mean that they will request. In my estimation, it doesn't mean that the DNR will grant it. I don't know, frankly, that it does much of anything. But I don't.
Senator Gazelka, to that.
Mr. Chair,
to the motion.
In particular, section C there. I understand that we have somebody that's doing this up in northeast Minnesota where I live, but why are we giving that provision just for that area rather than just deleting for sure section C and just saying everybody plays by the same rules?
Representative Hackbarth, to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the conference committee. I spoke against this provision on the floor. But I'm here to fight for the House position. And I told Representative Kahn that I would move this section of the bill. And I'm here to fight for the House position. And but just so you do know, I did not support it on the floor. And I, for the very same reasons that you just speak to. The DNR does research. There's different people that do research. This is very tightly woven to just the specific researcher. And I'm here to fight for the House position.
So the motion, members, is to delete
paragraphs B and C.
B and C from the Hackbarth motion.
To just C.
I'm sorry.
Just C.
B and C.
B and C. His motion is B and C.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my motion, my amendment.
Senator Carlson's withdrawn his motion. To the Hackbarth motion to accept House language section 28.
48.
Excuse me, 48. It's easy for me to say.
Mr. Chair, before I go up further, I'd make a motion to delete section C then by itself.
Paragraph C.
Representative Dill.
Well, on the section C, you know, Senator Gazelka, this is a major problem up where I'm at. I got 700 or 800 emails on this today. Every time somebody blinks an eye up there, we get another 700 or 800 or 1,000 emails. And, you know, frankly, I wish that we didn't have to protect a single bear. It should, be. And so I hope that if this language would prevail, that this would limit it just to this researcher under these permits, and that no one else would be able to do the same thing as he's doing. Now, I understand your side of that issue, but. I don't want this to be happening somewhere else in the state. I mean, we have the Vince Schutte Wildlife Sanctuary up in Orr, and there's a ton of bears there. Thousands of people come and view them, and you know they're not asking for. They've asked for protection for no hunting zones and buffer zones, and they've been denied. They finally came to an equilibrium. This is for this one place, for this one thing. The town of Ely has dramatically improved by the fact that there's. Tens of thousands of tourists come there and go to the International Bear Center, and it's what it is.
That's the reason that that language is in there, because his specific area for research is in one geographic area just north of Tower. Actually, Sudan. Tower and then Sudan is just north of there.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I...
Senator Gazelka.
Well, I know for a fact that these bears are becoming a little bit too friendly or not fearful of man, and so those that have cabins around there, they wander around and they are not completely friendly. And so I'm concerned, like you, in this whole thing that we're doing with somebody hanging around bears like that, I think it's created a problem. So I'm just concerned on multiple levels because of this.
And Mr. Chairman, that's the reason, Senator Gazelka, that I don't want this to happen anywhere else. Is because if we leave this open-ended and it were adopted, it could happen somewhere else if another research permit was issued. And so it's only going to happen there. And it's about a 50-50 issue in those communities as to whether this should even happen or not happen. So, you know, I invite you to vote the way you like on this. And I have to support the House position. This is a huge constituency of mine. And enough said on that.
To your motion, Senator Gazelka?
I'll withdraw the amendment and we'll just vote.
To the Hackbarth motion to adopt Section 48. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No.
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 Fails.
That's my worst one ever. I've been on about.
I was with you all the way on it.
That was just about like an amendment on the House floor today. When they said all in favor.
Just when
aye.
You think you had it,
not one
just
person said aye except me on the whole House floor.
Okay, let's move on here.
Mr. Chair, in R23.
I know we're all having fun, but we got to get going.
In R23. You have a provision on shooting grouse near a vehicle, Senate only. It's at 10 feet of a vehicle.
Representative Dill, did you want a backseat amendment to this? Windows only? No,
come
I'm
on,
sorry.
Bill.
Representative Dill.
This is, you know, I mean, I'm wondering if Major Smith has got a tape measure on him today. Is he here?
He's here.
He's here, and I don't think he has a tape measure.
That's the purpose of this. We're getting rid of deer stand heights. This is a budget-cutting issue for the Republicans. I mean, this is a way to save money. We won't have to issue the conservation officers tape measures. I mean, they keep bringing this thing back in over and over and over again, and I repealed it. And the thing is if you're shooting a Beretta automatic or a Remington automatic, and you walk however many feet it is, it doesn't matter to me, and you shoot, and then the conservation officer hears a shot, and you walk up to pick the grouse up, where's he going to measure from? He didn't see where you shot from. You going to measure from where the shell is ejected to? My Beretta shooting geese will go 15 feet. So, I mean, let's get reasonable here on this. I mean, people ride ATVs and they shoot grouse. So be it.
In fairness, Representative Dill, let's ask the enforcement officer to come up. But he does have, he may not have a tape measure, but he's got a gun, I think. So let's be. Major Smith, thank you.
Mr. Chair, for the record again, Rod Smith, DNR Enforcement. We have been getting a number of complaints from the walking grouse hunter versus the folks that are riding the ATVs, especially with the change in law with the uncased firearm provision that people that want to walk the grouse trails feel that there's a lot more people driving the ATVs and hunting because of the ease of the uncased, where they can just basically step off the machine, drop a shell, and shoot. So this would hopefully ease some of that.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Major Smith, I mean, as a new professional opinion, do you have better things to do than to figure out how far away from vehicles people are shooting grouse? I mean, as you prioritize the importance of your work out there, would this be a 1 or a 10 or maybe below 1?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jaskowski, how this is enforced, it's usually enforced along with when an officer would place a decoy out, because as Representative Dill stated earlier, if we hear a shot and then come back and try to find out where the person shot from, you have to get an admission from the person. So this would normally this is enforced usually using the placement of a decoy and the officer actually witnessing the person if they're hiding in the pucker brush or something. And this isn't something that's just done randomly. It's usually in response to a complaint area where we get multiple complaints of an individual or a group of individuals. And so we would set up a decoy and work that area that way.
Okay. Members, any further discussion? Representative Dill.
Just the last thing on this, Mr. Chairman. You know, they complained about this before there was the uncased gun bill as well. You know, this is an issue between the people who don't want ATVs and grouse hunters and the people who want to be traditional hunters and walk down the trail and not have the people with an ATV get a crack at a grouse. So, okay. You know, that's what this is about.
Members, any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, is there a motion?
No, there's no motion.
No. Let's move on.
And then, Mr. Chair, the next is a house-only provision on decoys. It's on page R24, House Section 52. Mr. Chair, there's also a repealer that goes along with it.
Hearing no discussion, move on.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, you also did not address, it was the same on the Northern Pike Experimental Special Management Waters. You want to address that now?
Sure.
It's on page R24, 38 in the Senate, 54 in the House.
Members of the committee, there's been some discussion since the beginning of the session with regards to spearing, and I believe that's the number of lakes? Is that correct?
Yeah,
is that what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
There's been discussion with the spearing folks in the state with regards to the amount of lakes that the DNR has been restricting over the years has grown from. At least their testimony was grown from 30 to 40 to 50, and now we're upwards of in excess of 115, 120. I'll have the DNR come forward with the exact numbers if I could, but for some discussion, I think we'll have a little discussion on this. I know myself as author and representative Hackbarth, our first bill talked about 60 lakes, restricting the state of Minnesota DNR to 60 lakes versus the 115 or so lakes. So that's what this discussion is about. It just seemed to have grown somewhat what we thought out of hand, and I did have discussion with the DNR, with the fisheries, as to how they went about doing this. They do have public meetings when they do this. And Mr. Don Carlos, maybe you can explain exactly the procedure real quickly as to how you got from such a small number of lakes, if in fact that was the case, to where you're at now.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, all of these lakes have support from stakeholders. I believe almost without exception, and fisheries runs a fairly extensive processes in designating them. Fisheries has an ESOSID management plan that does cap the total number of lakes with Northern Pike special regs at 125, and that is the max that's in our plan. It's not statutorily limited. The number of waters currently regulated is 119. And we have consistently through committees opposed this because it will require us to arbitrarily reduce the number of lakes that currently have special regs, and we think there's going to be quite a backlash to that from the stakeholder groups that have supported them. So we're at 119. That's the problem with 90. Our plan says 125. We'd be very comfortable at that number.
Any questions, members? Members, I
go ahead.
I'm sorry, Representative. Go ahead, Representative McNamara.
No, go ahead first.
I guess I certainly felt comfortable I remember what committee it was. We reduced it down to, you went back up to 90 from 60, and I think the House language reads the same here. I'm just concerned about the amount of folks that are that are turning their head on spearing here. Back in the 70s, I think there were like 40,000, testimony that there were 40,000 licenses sold in Minnesota for spear fishing, and we're now down to 14,000 per year. So that should be concerning to everybody here. And I certainly understand the reason why we have restricted lakes to try and grow bigger pike. I'm just not sure that's exactly what's happening here. I think there might be some other interests that might have made the number grow to where it is now. But Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And somebody that grew up as a kid doing a lot of spearing, which I did, but I do have concern that there's a lot invested by the DNR in the management of these lakes. I'm wondering if the two chairs would consider going to 105 lakes instead of 90.
Representative Hackbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McNamara. We started out at 60. We could have testimony. We could have the spear fishermen come up, the Dark Halls Association.
I think you should, yeah.
And we can do that, and they can give us a little bit of history of what happened here. I'm going to try to keep it brief so they don't have to have a lot of testimony. But they would like to go to – they think a compromise is probably 75. And, you know, I'd like to go to 75. I'd like to go to 60. And Senator Ingebrigtsen and I have been struggling with this, and we want to get this bill passed. And I was going to make a motion to turn this back to 75 lakes, but we do want to get the bill signed by the governor, and I hope that the Dark Halls folks can go along with us on that. I know Senator Ingebrigtsen wanted to go to 75 lakes also, but we got to get this bill signed. So I think that there's really kind of a compromise between Senator Ingebrigtsen, myself, and hopefully the Dark House folks are hearing this for the first time. They will go along with us on this, too, because we've got to get this bill passed, and we want to put this cap in place. So I think this is probably the right thing to do.
Representative Hackbarth, before we take any testimony, we do have to make a motion before midnight to go till 1 in the morning, so I would entertain that motion. A motion to move go to the motion. Representative Duskowski makes that motion.
Mr. Chair.
I'm not sure I'm going to.
Well, I was just going to say, I watched
Senator
the House.
Stoy.
I watched the House on this kind of motion just a couple nights ago.
4 hours. I think they ended up talking at 2:30 in the morning about whether they should have finished up at midnight. Is that correct? No. To Representative Ruskowski's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and briefly give us a description of how you feel about this.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing us to speak tonight. We really appreciate the open forum. Tim Spreck, president of the Minnesota Dark House Angling Association. I represent a statewide organization of 3,000-plus members who are sending us to you tonight, as they have throughout the entire session, with a mandate saying there are too many lakes that are controlled, they're punitive, and they're discriminatory against harvest anglers like ourselves. Many of you have heard testimony from myself and Mr. Geschel through the committee process, so I'm not going to go into the specifics of it, but it's important for you all to understand tonight and to realize that the DNR has overregulated with a very small minority group of anglers in mind, and those are the people that are interested in trophy and large pike. We represent the large majority. We represent the people who would like to be able to take fish home for dinner, and we also understand and want you to understand that a majority of the lakes that are currently regulated cannot and will not ever produce a large trophy pike. They do not have the biomass room within the lake itself. They don't have the genetics. They don't have the forage. And they don't have another or a variety of different criteria that are required to grow large northern pike. It's not happening. On a lot of the lakes that have been regulated for up to and over 20 years, the results have been dismal at best. What you're seeing is basically a small incremental increase in some of the size of these pike, and it generally happens in the 19 to 22-inch range. This is below the slot, and these are fish that people are not interested in trying to fillet. So The DNR has a real credibility issue on this specific topic because of the fact that they're not able to produce results. And based on that, we're willing to say, let's give them a number of lakes that they can regulate. Let's allow them to do that, but let's also make sure that there's ample opportunity for the vast majority of anglers in the state of Minnesota that would like to be able to take a fish home for dinner. So thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening.
Thank you for that, Mr. Gessel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Roger Gessel. I'm a past president of the Dark House Association, and I'd like to just get you to think of all these lakes that are being put under restrictions. It's not just for the people of Dark House. This is for everybody in the state of Minnesota that cannot harvest a fish off these lakes. I presented to both parties, the House and the Senate, maps of what some fisheries people have done to prevent people in their entire area. They'd have to go over 100 miles to be able to keep a northern pike. Now, a lot of these lakes, it originally started at 30. When I brought this proposal up for Trophy Lakes back in 2001, they decided, DNR, that 30 lakes was 30 to 36 was good. They then come around and said, well, we'll go to 36. And this was published in 2002 in December, that the DNR had these lakes that were listed in the newspaper. At the following couple weeks later at the round table, it was told that these lakes were it. That was it. We would have enough lakes to do this study on for 10 years. Since then, as soon as the round table was over, then they decided to add more lakes and more lakes. What's happened after 10 years in many of these lakes, they were not getting the results. Now, if you're not getting a result after 10 years with a northern pike, I guess the game is over because nothing's going to happen. Most of these lakes that we have are as it is. A lake is as it is. You can't make a trophy out of every lake you're trying to do this on. Most of these are not working. So then they decide, well, let's go from 10 up to 15 years. If you can't get anything, any results in 10 years, what's to say you're going to get it in another 5? And when we're doing this and we're going to 15 years, we're running the entire lifespan of these pike. There was an article recently about the trophy muskies in Mille Lacs, and 15 years, they're pretty much all dead. And that's what's happening here. We're going 15 years, no results. So we might as well scrap it. I think 90 is a number that we can live with.
Okay. Any questions, members? Mr. Don Carlos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. An additional concern that we have is the effective date of this, and to avoid making a change midstream in efficiencies and to allow enough time for us to get back to stakeholders and do some sort of a process to determine which lakes are going to be removed from the program. We'd suggest an effective date of May 1st, 2012. It would put it in effect before next year's fishing season, but it would give us time to do a process between now and then to select the lakes that need to be eliminated.
Mr. Gessel, to that point, and then we have to move on.
I would like to make this point. I think that all this can be done this summer. Most of these lakes have been reviewed. We don't need to wait till next year. This should be done by November 1st, November 15th, when the spearing season starts. We don't need to go during the winter. Nothing can be accomplished during the winter.
Okay, thank you for the testimony. And I think there's somebody else who would like to testify as well behind you there. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Vern Wagner. I'm Vice President of Anglers for Habitat.
Welcome to the committee, Vern.
Thank you. Our mission is to improve fishing in Minnesota. I'd like to point out that there are over 6,000 fishable lakes in Minnesota, and under current Minnesota regulations, you can harvest a fish in northern pike in every single one of those lakes. There are no restrictions where you can't harvest the fish. We have 3,200 pike lakes designated that are suitable for pike. So the large number we're talking about with Northern Pike is 3,200 lakes. There happens to be 120 lakes that do have special regulations. So of the 3,200 Northern Pike lakes, only 120 of them have a special regulation. Of those 120 lakes, only 10% of them, which is 12, are being managed for trophy pike. Just because you see one trophy pike, it's not fair to imagine, just because you see 12 trophy pike lakes, it's not fair to imagine that all 120 are being managed for trophy lakes. We would believe that all of the DNR science that has been presented in all of the committee hearings on this has all pointed to the fact that these regulations are working. There are 1.2 million anglers in Minnesota. And just because a small group of anglers do not like regulations and do not like pike regulations, we do not believe it's fair to the other people who harvest fish of all different sizes in Minnesota to have this program that we all worked for so many years to be dismantled because they don't like regulations. So we respectfully ask that the this committee respect and support the Minnesota's Northern Pike Management Program. It's a long-term program. It had plenty of stakeholder input. Many of the spearers were invited to participate in the process, and they did. This is an issue that's gone on for a long time. So our testimony is that 120 is the number because it's working. And we have examples of where a lake with special regulations, the reason it got involved is because it was filled with hammer-handled northerns. Now that these regulations are in place, the larger northerns are eating the smaller hammer-handles. And what they're seeing is an increased growth of the mid-sized pike and a decrease in hammer handles. And this is what the special regulations are supposed to do. And so they are working. And again, it's disingenuous to say that maybe on a couple of lakes, they're not working as well as they hoped they would to say that we need to dismantle the program. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much, members.
Sure.
Any questions? Representative McNamara, you talked about a number. I guess I would like to see it stay at 90. I think that's reasonable. We've been hearing now again two numbers, 119 now and 120. So I'm not sure exactly where the numbers are, but I think 90 is certainly a good compromise, especially in fact that in light of the matter that we came from 30 so quickly all the way up to 115 to 120, and I just think the fishing opportunities are going to be better for the spears if we are able to do that. So that's what I'd like to see. And as far as a date, I guess we certainly were optional for a date.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I just wanted to point out that this section that's unspecified will be effective on August 1st of this year. Mr. Geschel, I think, testified that November 1st was okay just to get in before the spearing season this year. I don't know if you wanted to give the DNR another 3 months or whatever to get this done, or do you want them to have it done by August 1st?
I think that's reasonable.
I think that's reasonable. I would make that motion to add that to the
November 1st.
November 1st.
And, well, Mr. Chair, and there's a kind of a technical then on if you, we would add in after 22.9, we would add effective date. The section is effective November 1, 2001. And I was wondering if you didn't on 22.5, you have August 1st, 2021, because you're giving them 10 years or whatever. I wonder if you wanted to change that to November so it would match with the effective date.
Certainly, I would implement that into my motion as well. Members, you understand the motion?
I believe he meant November 1, 2011, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, on line 22.5, it is actually 2021.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's because you're giving them 10 years from the date it's effective.
I heard 2001. Maybe I was
I'm sorry. I might have mistakenly said this. I'm sorry.
Everybody understand that motion? And that's on the House language?
Correct. The language is the same on both sides. Okay. It doesn't matter, but I'm doing it on the House language.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
And then, we did have a Senate only on fishing contest AIS, but it's my understanding there was different language passed in 1115, and that's the preferable language, so it wouldn't be moved here on R26, the AIS fishing contest. It's section 50 on the Senate side. It was my understanding that would not be moved. It's section, it's 21.33 to 22.8.
On which section are we?
It's R26, but my understanding is that's not going to be moved. It's you had different language in 1115 than what's here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything further?
And then, Mr. Chair, you have a House provision on two lines on R28, House line. Section 59 on the House side.
That was the two-line. That regards the two-line fishing. Is that correct,
Mr. Chair? Yes, it allows two-line fishing in limited
circumstances.
Mr. Chair, for the sake of time, I'm not going to move the language because I think it's going to fail. Let's go home.
Okay. And then,
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Hackbar.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Representative Dill, for that, but. As long as you brought it up and you're not going to move it, I would like to speak a little bit to it. We spoke a little bit earlier about all the regulations that are on all these lakes that the DNR has imposed. Every lake you go to has got different regulations. It's just insane how people can even figure out what they're supposed to do when they go to a lake and fish. Every lake is different. You can keep different slot limits on every different lake, and you got to know all these things. Members, one of the reasons I'm on this committee and have been since I've been elected on the Environment and Natural Resources Committee is because of hunting and fishing and having fun. And we've got to get fun back into Minnesota and fun back into tourism in the state of Minnesota. And I believe one of the reasons that the fishing licenses are dropping off and people aren't fishing anymore is because of some of the things that we're doing when it comes to fishing. Let's try to make fishing fun again. And that's why I've been moving this two-line fishing thing, is let people catch some fish. So let's start making fun for Minnesotans again when it comes to the Minnesota natural resources, ATVing, snowmobiling, skiing, all those kinds of things, boating, all the things that we do to recreate in the state. Let's start making things fun again. And that's one of the reasons that this is here. I've got the constituents that want it. I'm going to have a lot of disappointed people that aren't going to get this. But I'm here to compromise, Mr. Chairman. And I know that we don't have the votes, particularly on the Senate side. This has passed the House. But we're going to let it go.
Appreciate that. Did you represent a bill?
First off, when I bring this provision back next year, I hope it's not going to be the Al Junkie Memorial provision. It'll just be the Al Junkie provision. Hopefully he'll still be alive when we get this passed. But next year I intend to bring it back, so this will give you some time to think about this because many of us will still be on the same conference committee. And I'm going to drop from an anchored watercraft. So I'm going to make this to start out next year, and you can anticipate it. You're going to be the rest of the language from a shore dock or pier, because I just cannot believe that we can't let people fish with two lines and put a little fun back into this. When you get on a lake that you can catch some bluegill or sunfish or something like that you can't fish with two lines. That's like shooting a grouse like we talked about earlier. I mean, when are we going to start putting some fun back in this? Has anybody looked at the numbers? That's enough.
Representative Dill, I got to rail a little bit back here. I bluegill fish a lot. In fact, with one of the guys that's sitting in a crowd right here tonight, I've fished with him for many, many years, and I know when the fish are biting, there's just no way that you're going to be able to fish with two lines. However, that doesn't mean you have to fish with two lines. I understand right. that. But I agree. I mean, we got to get something, some fun back here, and the regulations have gotten a little bit carried away. There's no question about that. Well, and I don't think anybody in this room will argue with that.
And, Mr. Chairman, it's not just about fishing for two lines and you're using both lines to catch walleyes or two lines to catch bluegills or whatever. You might be out there maybe bobber fishing for some walleyes and maybe you're close to an area where there might be some smallmouth bass or some largemouth bass and you want to cast for them or for some northerns. So, you know, you can be bobber fishing and casting at the same time for different species. I mean, that makes things fun. It's more of an opportunity.
Sure, I understand.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka. Three times and I'm out.
Representative Dill, I'll give that some consideration for next year. I can think about earlier days of lake trout fishing from shore and surely wanting two lines.
So, members, we've heard from everybody who needs two lines to be able to catch a fish in Minnesota tonight, so let's move forward. Let's move on.
Mr. Chair, we've got about four things left to talk about, at least on the list. Immunity, grazing.
Just kidding, by the way.
Grazing on DNR lands, immunity. It's R32. It's a house-only provision, Section 64.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that section.
Representative McNamara moves Section 64. Members, do you understand this section? Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And, Mr. Chair, the next one we have are the Deer Hunting Regulations Series 300, Zone 3, R35, Section 68 on the House side.
R35, same side.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Raskowski. From Section 3.
It starts on R35, and I think it continues over onto R36, but it's at the bottom. You can see Deer Hunting Rules, Section 68.
Mr. Chair, I would move that provision and then offer an amendment.
To the Representative Raskowski moves this provision to the amendment, Representative Raskowski.
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be to strike the language on 32.5 and 32.6, but adopt the remaining portion.
Members, do you need a description of that? If not,
we should be moving.
Any further discussion? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to confirm my understanding was the language as it was a compromise that, and now you're taking this away. Is that still part of the compromise?
Well, it's somewhat. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like it's unworkable with the DNR in terms of it's going to throw a big wrench into their research that they're doing around this particular thing, and the administration will be difficult as well. So I talked with Senator Miller, and we agreed to remove that part of this compromise, and the DNR has also agreed to work directly with us and work with landowners to allow to inform them more and make more available the special landowner permits for deer damage on crops, et cetera, for landowners to be able to shoot does. That's the best we have at this point, but it seems acceptable to everyone.
Senator Gazelka, I did confer with Senator Miller, and he was in agreement with the compromise. So, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, you have a house only on R36, Section 69. To Lake Florida fishing restrictions.
Chairman.
Representative Dill.
Okay, this is was in the bill last year and was in the governor's veto letter. But we have redone the language. I'd like to hear from the department. When I say we, Representative Anderson, I believe, had this bill.
I did not carry the bill this year. I believe this is one of Representative Anderson's constituents. In full disclosure, he has some of the finest hunting land in South Dakota, and I hunt on it with him. But I do not have a house on that lake, nor have I ever fished on that lake. Making
Representative Bill, I don't think that matters. I don't think that matters in this committee. Well, I guess it does.
So anyway, I've never even been to the lake, Chairman. But this language, I believe, if we could hear from Mr. Meyer on the line.
Mr. Meyer, from the DNR, please.
He's not racing.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer, for racing to the table. Could you give us
an idea? We're flipping a coin to see who's coming up.
Could you just give us an overview of this? Explain it to the committee. And
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. This issue did come up in the House, and in discussions with Representative Anderson and Representative Hackbarth, the concerns that we had last year specifically were dealt from restricting fishing from the shore. There was another provision in the bill that prevented strict fishing from shore in another part of the state. So the compromise that we worked out in the House was to prevent fishing in the whole area of the culvert in that end of the lake during the month before the opener, I believe. We still don't have any biological reason that we have to prevent this fishing, but one of our main concerns was that we were pitting one group of fisher people against another group of fishing people. So from that point of view, the language is more equitable, but the department still doesn't have a biological reason to prevent this fishing during this part of the year. So,
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, part of the reason I'm not going to support this at this time is I talked to Senator Gimsey, and he had not heard from anybody about this, and so since he represents the area as well, I just feel like we didn't hear it anywhere in the Senate, and I don't feel comfortable with this yet.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Did we move this, by the way?
No.
It's not removed. Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I will move it. I will move Section 69.
And Mr. Chairman.
This Representative Dill to the Hackbarth motion.
This has a lot to do with the stakeholders that live on the lake and who have worked to restore and to establish this population of fish that congregates there during the spring, and they're trying to take it easy on the fish. I mean, up at Crane Lake, we have an area that's closed, but they have a biological reason for closing it. It's a walleye spawning area. It's got Vermilion River coming from the center Box Lake, and there's a reason for that one. The reason for this one is in respect to the people who have done all the work on that lake. And so I'm surprised that the senator hasn't heard anything about it, because this bill has been around for several years and floating around and working on it. And as I said, the department came to Waterloo on the language with Representative Anderson on it.
Representative Dill, I'm being told it never has been introduced in the Senate, so there is no Senate companion? Or?
No, well, that's Mr. Chairman, that's probably correct. It's always been introduced in the House.
Okay.
And so I do not know why the Senate has not had a bill introduced. I know there's been jackets sent over there.
I guess, okay, members, any further discussion? I guess I would have to support, members, I would have to support the vote against the Hackbarth motion for that reason. I guess I would like to certainly hear it in this committee, and I would certainly do what I can to get it on the committee next year and get it up for some discussion. So
next year,
any further discussion on the Hackbarth motion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No. Oh, sorry. No.
Fails. Members.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry.
Could we have a division? Show us.
Certainly. Certainly. We're going to have a division. All in favor of the Hackbarth motion to accept Section 69, House position. Raise your hand, please. All against? The motion fails.
15 players.
Mr. Chair, we have R37, we have some repealers. And we're a little different on the two sides. Let me just explain. It's probably best if you look at page R30, the top of page R37. The House has some additional repealers that don't show up in the Senate side, but were passed in the Senate budget bill. And that's, if you look at 97B.5, on 33.5 in the House, 97B.511 and 97B.515 subdivision 3, those are the elk and moose stand heights. We're repealing those. And the Senate did repeal it in the budget bill, but it just doesn't show up here. Now, you wouldn't want to do 33.6 because you didn't do the House decoy language. The 97B.811 subdivision 4, you wouldn't want to do that because that's tied, that's basically saying that it can't be a hazard if they're left out overnight. So you'd want to continue to have that in the law. That was the one that was tied to that provision. So in paragraph A, you could adopt, if you adopt the House repealer without 97B811 subdivision 4, you would basically be adopting repealers that have been adopted by both sides.
I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on the Hackworth motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
And then, Mr. Chair, you do have a House-only repealer on paragraph B that deals with repealing something from Senate File 1115. That's the allowing non-oxygenated gasoline to be used to be brought in for testing for ATVs and snowmobiles and such.
Mr. Chairman, I would recommend that no one move that and it be taken out of the conference committee report, not become law.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, it just won't be moved, so then we'll just be dealing with paragraph A then in the repealer.
Correct.
And Mr. Chair, I think that's the end of the list, unless there's something else that somebody else notices on the list.
I think we have an amendment.
Yep.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, as you know, we have some grazing provisions in here, and I've just got one more. It was a House bill that I'd like to move. It's the S0943A12 amendment. Senator Scoy.
Representative McNamara moves the A12 amendment to the amendment. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when I first saw this amendment, I thought, gee, I thought I took care of this a dozen years or so ago when we were working with pastures and winter feeding areas. Evidently, we didn't, and I'm supportive of this because, you know, this land is green during the summertime, and it should qualify.
Members understand the amendment? Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, members, I've been trying to get some clarification from other agencies on this. I'm not sure where the PCA or the Department of Ag may stand on this issue. I don't know if Representative McNamara has any idea of that.
Representative McNamara.
I cannot say for sure, Mr. Meyer.
That'd be the only concern I have. I don't have any idea of what this amendment does, and I haven't been able to get a hold of anybody that can tell me that. So I guess
broad is a definition.
Not knowing that, I have some concerns if there is some impact from other agencies or not. So,
Representative McNamara.
Well I do know that someone from the ag industry is here. Maybe Mr. Chair, we'd want to hear from Mr. Clavin.
Mr. Clavin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota State Cattlemen Association. Briefly, I can tell you what this is. If you look on page or line 1.13, you'll see cropping purposes. What happens here has to do with putting cattle on harvested corn stalks. And the PCA knows that if you put them on grass, it's a pasture. But if you have them in a concentrated feedlot where there's no vegetative cover, that's a feedlot. The question is, what do you do with a cornfield? And so this would allow the cattle to be turned out on a cornfield without a permit, just like they are in a pasture in the summer. We did hear this in the House committee. I think the PCA had a concern. I honestly can't remember what it is, but it was probably likely the same concern we hear on every bill we bring, which is they'll yank the federal authority if you do this. But I don't remember if that's exactly what it was. But they tell us that on everything we bring.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I did a lot of work on this a number of years ago, and my recollection of the issue is as long as the area is green during the growing season, that it should qualify for a pasture. Obviously, this corn land is going to be green during the growing season. They harvest it. Then they want to turn some cattle out and pick up the corn. It's a real efficient way to work your animals, and I'm supportive of this.
Senator Scoy, you have somewhat of a conduit to the governor's office. This wouldn't be a problem with them. Do you happen to know that?
Well, Mr. Chair, no, I don't, but seems pretty minor, I wouldn't think that this would be a huge issue.
Members, any further discussion on the A-12 amendment? Hearing none? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A-11 amendment.
Being passed out. Senator Hall to the A-11 amendment.
Members, the A-11 amendment deals with lands that were deeded by Dakota County to Minnesota for the purpose of the Minnesota Zoo, and this would extend that purpose.
Thanks.
Basically it.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hall, this was added on to the DNR lands bill that has already passed both the House and Senate and is on its way to the governor. This would be unnecessary. It's already, we just passed it in the Senate this evening. I believe it was
earlier.
Yeah, it's already on its way to the governor.
Representative Heckberg.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I haven't done it this year, but I'm pretty much an old hand at putting things in a lot of different places and not taking any chances. And I think it's a good thing to do, to tuck things in different places so you get things passed if you got to have them. And I promised our state representative that we'd do that here, and I think it's a good idea.
Thanks.
I supported her on the lands bill and getting it in there, too.
To the, to the Senator Hall A-11 amendment, any further discussion? Representative McNamara, did you raise your hand?
No.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Anything more before the committee?
Do you have anything, Mr. Chair?
I'm good.
Members, this concludes the
motion just to.
We have to a motion to adopt. Motion to have the staff prepare the committee for the, excuse me, the